Hello, Kate.
Hello, Carrington. We did it.
We did it. We did it all. Let's do it again.
Okay. Wait, what?
That counts as a contract. You're in. Canadian laws apply.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory.
We did it. We did them all. I mean, all the text-only ones. There's still the graphic ones to go. But I actually do feel a real sense of accomplishment. Like, it kind of struck me when you finished, because you finished this one before me, and I was congratulating you on doing them all. I'm like, yeah, we've actually played every one of these stinking games. That's something I always wanted to do, and so I'm really thrilled to have done it.
Me too. Yeah, it's something like I always wanted to do, but it was frankly one of those things that people want to do that no one does. Like, I'm going to climb Mount Kilimanjaro or something, you know. It's just like, it feels like we did one of those things that is an insurmountable task.
Yeah. And like, and honestly, it's, I owe it to you, because I mean, for literally decades, I wanted to play all these games. But I never would have gotten around to it if you hadn't got in touch with me and said, hey, I want to play these games. Do you want to do a podcast? And because I then had to play them for the podcast, I was like, okay, I can't let my buddy down. Let's play a game. It's weird that I need to be forced to have fun, but you know, welcome to 2020.
Right. Indeed.
Yeah, but it's been awesome. Super, super fun.
Cool.
Yep.
And I didn't record like the first minute of our conversation, so, but you did. So
I did. Good. I okay. Got it all.
We're recording now. Cool. So, yes, we played The Lurking Horror, which was probably the one that you were most excited about, and I was completely ambivalent about.
I was absolutely. From the very beginning, I think I've said this in a couple of episodes, but from like day one, the game that most appealed to me was The Lurking Horror. I don't know why. I'm not even a massive horror fan. I used to be as a kid. I loved horror movies, gory things, all that kind of stuff. And I've read horror. And I've read some H.P. Lovecraft stuff. And so I like the genre. But for some reason, like this particular idea, like an H.P. Lovecraft horror story set at MIT, just resonated with me. I've been anxious to play it. It really appealed to me.
You were so anxious. You put it off to the last one.
So anxious, I put it off as long as possible. Right. So I'm interested to see what you think, and I'm looking forward to kind of talking about, did it hold up to the hype? I hyped it up, and so then we will see.
Okay, great. Should we look at some mail first?
Yeah, we should. Oh, we get letters and stacks and et ceteras.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Did I write it in? Yes. Friend of the show, Chris Otto. He wrote in, sent us email to say, Kay and Carrington, as you creep down the final corridors and juggle the final inventory items in Infocom text-only adventures, I want to thank both of you for this nearly four-year trip down memory lane. I played many of these games as a teenager in the 1980s, and while it's unlikely I will play them again, it's been a joy and comfort during this pandemic to listen to your adventures in freshly tackling them. I will remain the contrarian and say that I think the best first game for someone is Zork. It's so vast, illogical, baffling, and funny. It truly is an alien landscape that came before most structured and fair Infocom games. I remember it being such a joy to spend days and weeks thinking about it, messing around, and finally cracking the puzzles. And with its scope, it's a great two-player game. My mom and I played it simultaneously in the 1980s, and we both brought different aspects of the unconventional thinking needed to eventually finish the game. Those are good memories. Peace and good health to both of you. That is an excellent letter, and I think a good defense of Zork as a first game.
Okay.
I still don't think it's the best first game, but you know, no. That's just me. You might be a friend of the show, Chris, but you're still wrong.
More emails like that, and you're going to be ticking down to frenemy of the show.
Which is like the best category.
Right. Nail Bullet wrote in, said, hello, Carrington and Kay. I just finished Wishbringer. Not quite in time for your recording. By the way, I'm... never mind about that. I played the Commodore 64 version of Wishbringer on Vice Emulator. I never owned the game when it was released, but the C64 was my machine of choice, so I thought I'd go with that. I have no nostalgia for Apples, as they were extremely rare in the UK at the time. I don't know anyone who had one, and I don't actually think I had heard of them. Anyway, Wishbringer. I really enjoyed the game, although there were some things which annoyed me. I completed the game without using magic, although it was kind of accidental, because I didn't really figure out to use magic, how to use magic. It was still unclear where I would have used it until I leapt the spoiler fence. I managed to complete it cheating only twice. Spoiler. Many thanks for doing the podcast. I have listened to every episode, although I only started partway through. I went back and listened to the older ones. I found your podcast after I played Zork for the first time in 20 years. The games I played through with you live included Infidel, Hollywood Hijinks, and Plundered Hearts, as well as Wishbringer. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think you should read the best email we have ever gotten.
Dear Carrington from Carrington, you're awesome. Signed, Carrington. Is that the one you're talking about?
That's the one.
Okay, no, I know the one you mean. It must be the one from Nathan. Let me find that one. Yeah. It was swell. Nathan sent us. Hey guys, I know Wishbringer was a couple of episodes ago, but I hope this is of interest. Yesterday, my 11-year-old daughter came to me and said, Daddy, could you teach me to play text adventures? My family is well aware of my hobby, and her two older siblings are more or less into IF themselves. Yes, I said, I'll find you a good beginner game for tomorrow afternoon. After a bit of thought, I chose Wishbringer. I've never introduced it as a first game before, and I was curious to see how it would go. We read through the list of wishes from the PDF manual that came with my classic text adventures masterpieces of Infocom. Then I ran the interpreter and passed her my laptop. I had not realized just how friendly Wishbringer is. After reading the initial description, she typed, "Go south." When she tried asking Mr. Crisp, "What do you want?" the game gently told her how to use ask. I honestly didn't have to give her any real hints. When the game told her to draw a map, I suggested she take it seriously. When the game told her to save, she asked me how. I did type verbose for her at the start and explained the use of examine, as well as the standard abbreviations. Here's an interesting data point in the get/take debate. She used grab. Repeatedly, she would come up with an idea and tell me, and I would say, "Try it and see." Sometimes it didn't work, but sometimes it did, and she got that satisfying text adventure feeling. We did have to resort to the InvisiClues twice for things even I couldn't remember near the end, but she was really good. The boot squad never caught her, and she didn't use any wishes. She didn't even find the stone until just before leaving the tower. My kid won Wishbringer in an afternoon and left me feeling pretty proud. That is such a good email.
Nice.
Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing.
Yeah, completely amazing. Also, your 11-year-old daughter beat the game way faster than Kay and I.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that game took me 6 days or something.
After us already having done like 30 of them in a row or something. So mm-hmm. It is what it is. But I mean, just, I love everything about that email. And I love the grab. I'm going to stick as being a take person, but I definitely would go take, then grab, and then only rely on get if I had to.
Grab is a great word.
Totally, yes. Right. Yeah. Grab the rake. I love it. I absolutely love it. Mm-hmm. So good.
Good. Nathan also wrote to talk to you about your parser troubles that you had tweeted about.
Oh, we got troubles. Stacks and stacks of troubles. Stacks I did tweet about not being able to. Hey, I'm not really good at these games.
Right. Sure. So I think you were complaining about you used you said open microwave and take carton, and it didn't. You were mad at the parser for not understanding that, and I think the parser didn't like it because there was no object called take carton, right?
Right. Because I used and instead of then.
Then, right. And then he said, "Remember when Kay sent me a bug report about cutthroats not handling take light and putty and drill? That's not really. It's not really easy to have it both ways." So yeah, I guess in English you can use and for both things, but in Infocom, you either want to use and or then.
Well, the game is in English, so I want a colloquial game that handles everything as I intend.
I see.
The standard, I'm holding it to now.
You need a Canadian Carrington version. Of...
Exactly. You got to type the word A at the end of everything.
It says sorry a lot.
That's how you get past any puzzle. Just say sorry. And Groove says, oh, it's all good. Come on in. We got a really great email from Singapore. Who was this? Joseph emailed from Singapore, where he is a postdoctoral researcher. It's a long one, but a really good one. He says, Dear Kay and Carrington, I only recently discovered your podcast as I was stuck in my small room in an old government housing flat in Singapore as a result of COVID. It has been a delight to revisit my original love for Infocom games. Our paths to Zork are twisty, but they are not all alike. Here's mine. I was what is known as a missionary kid. My father was a minister of a small evangelical church in Manila, Philippines. We moved to the Philippines from the United States during the final years of the Marcos dictatorship and lived for a time in the midst of a shantytown. Shortly after the People Power Revolution put an end to the martial law regime in 1986, my parents bought an old model Apple II Plus. It was impossible to buy any original software, so I was a pirate by default. There was a large electronics market where every knockoff and pirated good imaginable was sold, and one small stall there sold pirated games. For 20 pesos a disc, about 50 cents US at the time, I could buy a floppy of just about any game, although most games only became available a year or two after they were published in the States. I picked a game I wanted from a Xeroxed and faded list of programs, the list indicating nothing more than the name of the game, the hardware it ran on, and the number of discs it would require. As luck would have it, I picked Zork 1, probably because it was at the end of the list. Because of the way the software was sold, I not only missed out on the browsies and feelies, but also the InvisiClues and even the basic instruction manual. I fell in love with the great underground empire. Because of my religious upbringing, I tried to hide certain elements of the game from my parents. I would never attempt to enter Hades if they were in the room, and I later was terrified that they would associate Zork 3, the Dungeon Master, with Dungeons and Dragons, which I was strictly forbidden. I played and completed without a single cheat Zork 1, 2, and 3, and Planetfall. The single hardest puzzle for me in the entire experience proved to be a parser issue. I was stumped by a Zork 2 riddle for nearly a year, not because I couldn't solve the riddle, but because I couldn't figure out how to tell the darn parser the answer. I tried to say the answer, etc. Turns out you need to use the verb answer. I would have known that if I had a manual. In any event, the Infocom games and one other beloved game, Below the Root, accompanied me through a good life in Manila. I played through repeated military coup attempts. I was still playing on my old Apple II Plus in 1991 when Mount Pinatubo erupted and blanketed the city in ash. I now have a PhD in Southeast Asian history. Thanks to my upbringing, I will only work on Linux since Apple II is no longer living. But thanks to your podcast, I installed Frotts and began playing Infocom again. I've now completed Ballyhoo, Enchanter, Sorcerer, Spellbreaker, and Wishbringer. Feeling that Frotts wasn't quite hipster enough, I learned to map the games using IFM, which I can write in Vim while I'm playing. Anyway, thanks for bringing some needed cheer to my quarantine. I love that story. I think it's awesome.
Yes, thank you, Joseph. That is great.
And it's an interesting thing about, I don't think we ever talked about it at the time when we talked about Zork, because a big thing in the 80s was that whole satanic panic thing, which isn't just a Singapore thing, it was all through the States, less so I think here in Canada. But subsequently, I've known a bunch of people, I did a podcast with a guy for ages, who as a kid wasn't allowed to play a lot of arcade games or Dungeons & Dragons or any of that, because it was going to be like this gateway to Satanism or what have you. So I bet that did affect games certain kids could play, or maybe games they would want to play even more, but hide them from their parents or what have you. But it's definitely part of the zeitgeist at the time the Infocom games were coming out.
Absolutely.
Zeitgeist, and you say? Yes.
Zeitgeist. And I mean, as if these games aren't hard enough on their own, he's playing them without a manual, he's playing them without InvisiClues, and he's got military coups going on, and he's got volcanoes erupting.
It's awesome. It's absolutely the best way to play.
Yes. Oh, sure.
I can't imagine finishing a Zork game without InvisiClues or the manual or even the browsy. It's like, I would have been completely lost. It's remarkable. Though it does mean, unlike us, people are able to actually finish these games without resorting to cheating. At least other people are.
People who are better than
me. Not so much us.
I think that's all the new mail.
Is that all our new mail?
Something else?
Oh, we got one from Matthew, who said he's been enjoying the podcast, especially your review of Stationfall, as oddly, that was his first Infocom game back in the day. He goes on to say, you've been saying that the lurking horror is the last one. Will you be reviewing Arthur, Shogun, or Journey? I'm particularly interested in Journey, as I remember my dad buying that for my birthday many years ago, and it stumped both of us. So what say you? Okay, since episode one, people have said, when you finish the Infocom games, what are you doing next? And so while we've technically finished the text adventure Infocom games, there are games from Infocom that have like sprinklings of graphics or spreadsheets.
There are four graphical games.
Heresy.
Yes, I know. Right.
I thought the greatest graphics were in my mind.
Right. That's what I've been led to believe by the Infocom advertising, and maybe Activision did not agree with that. The greatest graphics involve iRes graphics, apparently.
Greatest graphics are this card we'll sell you for your IBM.
Right. So there are four games that are Infocom games. So here's kind of the levels. There's the text adventures, which we have played. There's four more games, which are Shogun, Arthur, Quest for Excalibur, Journey, The Quest Begins, and Zork Zero, which are the graphical games released by Infocom. And then there's Cornerstone, right?
The business game.
The business game. And then there's the post-Infocom Infocom releases, which were really Infocom in name only. Or they were just it was just a brand at that point.
Like BattleTech things or whatever.
Yeah
and those really are not Infocom games, even though they have the Infocom logo on the box. They've got nothing to do with Infocom.
Right. So if you want to keep going, I'm absolutely willing to keep going.
100%.
I want to do these graphical games. That gives us four more games to play.
And I just do it for the sense of achievement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we'll see what happens from there. But okay.
I dig it. I am full of enthusiasm and ready to continue.
Okay. And now why we're doing this, why we're having this discussion now, the order that these last four were released, these graphical games, were Zork Zero, Shogun, Arthur, Journey. That was the 32nd through 35th game.
Got it.
My feeling is, if this is okay with you, is that we play them in order, except I think we should do Zork Zero last, because we started with Zork 1 and we
should
end with Zork Zero.
I like it. Yeah. So it's like a binary bookend, a 1 to a 0. Got it.
Sure. Okay. So that means the next game we will play will be James Clavell's Shogun, which I've never seen the show. I've never read the book. I had the book for a while, like 3 years ago. I stumbled upon a copy of the book, and it was like 8,000 pages. And I thought, I can read this before we play it on the podcast. And I read like 6 pages. And not that I wasn't enjoying them, but I got distracted by shiny things. So have you played Shogun? Have you read Shogun? Have you seen the show?
I have not seen the show. I have not played the game. Like you, I have at one point in my life owned the book. But I have read less of it than you. I remember, I think it must have been high school, because the game came out in like the mid-70s or something. So I think it was in high school. I had a copy of the book, and I have a vague memory that it had like a white cover, and it just had the word Shogun on it in like red or something. Mm-hmm. And maybe it had the sword. I don't know. I remember picking it up. Yeah. I picked it up used. It was a paperback book. It was super thick. It was like as thick as it's tall, like one of those really thick books that looks like the pages are going to fall out while you read it. So I picked it up. I probably when the there was like a TV show or miniseries or something that was out. So probably at the time it was in the zeitgeist. Oh, I wonder how many times I can say that word this show. Two, apparently. I think two is enough. Yeah. So I owned it. I don't think I was actually even that interested in it, and I don't even know what happened to it. But I definitely did not read it. I don't even think I even read page one. Nothing. So that's my experience. Cool. It'll be a completely fresh game for me. I have no cheats.
All right. Interesting. I don't know if that will be an advantage or a disadvantage for us, but I guess we'll find out.
Yes, we will find out.
Mm-hmm. All right. But so, great. I'm excited. More games. More Carrington.
More games. More K. But first, we've got the lurking horror, the game of that I most was interested in.
So you already kind of said that you used to like horror and mm-hmm. you were most interested in this. I had no feeling about this game. I basically knew it was a horror thing set at MIT. I wasn't particularly interested in playing this because I do not like horror movies. I don't like to be scared. I'm just doesn't interest me. So when I, you know, read about what this was, I'm just like, okay, this game is not for me. But this game surprised me in a lot of ways. And
like horror surprise, like leap out and scare you, or
like in a ooh, you know, this is interesting. Hmm. And I want to keep going, and this is more, you know, funnier than I thought, and that sort of thing.
It's pretty funny for a horror game.
Right. Yes.
I think maybe to its detriment. That's the thing I want to talk about. If it was going for the pure horror thing, because I think it's a lot sure. of times there's a bit of creepiness and a lot of comedy, but not so much horror.
Right. So, you know, but this game was not like scary. There was some gross stuff, you know, but yeah.
And some really good deaths. I'm going to talk about the deaths.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the box.
Sure. How did you play it?
How did I play? I played it on the Apple II emulator using the thing that we use.
The Pitch Dark.
Pitch Dark. Yeah, 4AM's and Cucumbers.
As did I. It is still my favorite way to play these. Gives me that retro feeling, and the 6 save slots that all anybody needs, which you and I both keep chiding 4AM about.
Right. Yes, they were a stretch for this game, for yep. sure. I could have used a lot.
There was one point in particular where I got very stumped. I think we'll have to talk about this after the spoiler fence, but there was a point where I couldn't get past a certain puzzle, and then I figured out a thing I could do, but doing it made me lose an item that I was pretty sure I was supposed to solve the puzzle without losing that item. So I was like, okay, I think I've just done one of those things where I've introduced a problem where I'm going to keep playing, but I'm going to have to, like, I won't be able to finish this game because I'm lacking a thing I think I'm going to need. Mm-hmm. So I saved, and I had to keep remembering save slot 3. Save slot 3 is the important one. Do not wipe over save slot 3 because you may be coming back there. So I don't know why I picked 3, but 3 was my, it's burned in my brain now. Don't write over that in case you need to come back there.
In your deathbed, you're going to be like 90 years old going to
save slot 3. And it's like, yes, his brain's been pudding for a while now.
Well, I did it. I got around it in a way that I don't think I've done before. Hmm. This is one of those.
Oh, I did the little cheat thing as well. I did that afterwards when you told me about it.
The little cheat thing?
For getting more saves in.
Oh, okay. You make a copy of the entire drive. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't do that this time. This is one of those games where you, to some extent, have to optimize your movements because you're going to run out of a couple of different resources that are going to mean you're dead. So you can't wander around for 900 moves and then figure out what you want to do and then do it, because by then you've run out of that resource or the other resource and you're dead. So I decided to, I created a text file with an optimized version of the moves in it that I could copy and paste into Pitch Dark. And so rather than using a lot of save slots, I basically did a lot of copy and pasting.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And I.
Now, were you able to paste like from the beginning? Like what you would do is just like start the game again and just paste like 300 moves, that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, I would, once I got to I did use some saves, but then I would have like, you know, save slot 2 and then like 30 moves and then save slot 3 and then 50 moves. So I was using them lightly, but so I could always go back, and I didn't feel like if I needed slot 3.5, it's fine. I could just paste some of the things and then do something different. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you're a sneaky boy.
Well, so yeah, I was having fun trying to like really optimize it to do as few moves as possible. I ended up like finishing the game in like 330 moves or something like that. Because, you know, I'm just like cutting corners and through the map.
Yeah, way fewer than me. I finished in 482. So, wow, you trounced me when it comes to moves.
Well, yeah. But,
and I'm kind of an optimizer as I play. So, well done you.
Yeah. So, anyway. Rather than... Anyway, it was an interesting challenge within a challenge to like maintain this basically a playthrough, you know, that, you know, I could just copy and paste.
You're playing the game within the game.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So that's how I did it. The box is, I think, one of the better.
Uh-huh. I've got the box for the Apple II.
Ooh,
of course, being one
tell
that
me about
I
it.
Love. This is the box. See, I get to make the box sounds. Francis, the Lurking Horror, and I think it's got excellent box art. Recently, we had a game with terrible box art. We won't have to revisit that one, but it was awful. I think the Lurking Horror is really good. So it's got the Lurking Horror, and in the middle is like a picture, kind of like the whole thing kind of looks like an eye that's opening, but in the iris, it's kind of jagged. So you've got like a lizard kind of eye that's going to open sideways, and inside that is a skull, and it's just like layers upon layers. Looks really good. Kind of sets the stage, so I dig it. The one I have is the standard gray box size. I don't think this came in a fancy version. I think it's just the normal gray box. On the back, it's got this normal sort of picture, which just shows you a bunch of the feelies and just as if somebody's playing the game. Like it's got the picture, keyboard, and the some of the items, the disc and such. But it says, ever since you arrived at GUE Tech, you've heard stories about the creepy old campus basements and storage rooms. So some so ancient that they contain only rotting piles of unidentified junk. Until now, you've never ventured lower than the ground floors of the monolithic classroom and dorm buildings, avoiding the warren of tunnels that connect them. But tonight, something draws you down into the mysterious depths of the Institute. Perhaps it's the blizzard raging outside, making the outdoors as threatening as anything you could imagine within. Perhaps it's the nightmare you had, hinting at horrific mysteries below and leaving you with a strange object that seems to lead you inexorably downward. Or perhaps it's just another way for you to avoid writing that 20-page term paper you have due tomorrow. In any event, you soon find yourself wandering away from your computer and into the dark nether regions of GUE Tech. Would it be GUE Tech? GUE Tech. Suddenly, you're in a world that rivals your most hideous visions, a realm of horror lurking beneath the calm corridors and study halls. Shapes emerge from dark corners, eerie sounds draw closer, slimy passageways lead to sights so horrifying they will feed your nightmares for weeks. The Lurking Horror recalls the ghastly visions of H.P. Lovecraft and Stephen King as author Dave Liebling turns an everyday world into a frightening web of uncertainty. The numerous puzzles will challenge both first-time and experienced players, and Liebling's chilling descriptions will leave you with images you'll never forget. Mwah! What else did Dave Liebling do? Where do we know him from?
Dave did lots of lovely things.
Right. He's the Zork guy in my mind.
Yeah, he was.
Starcross, maybe?
Let's see.
I think I'm supposed to know this stuff by now, aren't I?
Oh, yeah, we're supposed to know this. he did Suspect.
Okay, cool. I like Suspect more than you, but I dug it.
He did Spellbreaker.
Which we both loved.
Which we did. He did. He co-authored Zork 3 Dungeon Master.
Which we both did not.
Well, he did all Zorks. Yeah, Starcross. You were right.
Which I liked more than. So mostly, I like this guy's stuff more than you do.
He did Suspect Enchanter. Starcross. Well, yeah, he helped with Enchanter.
Okay. Which
I love.
Like those ones a lot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Did he do any of the later ones? Any of the graphic ones later? Or did he take off?
I only know about what we've done so far.
Okay. Well, we will find out in the future if he did more.
Right.
So inside the box, opening up here, we've got the usual suspects making more noises. It's the sound of noises. It's the smell of noises. So I've got the Apple II interactive fiction reference card. The typical thing tells me you're playing on Apple II, you get this. I've got the passport. Oh, as I've got my microphone, I banged. I've got that little catalog that comes that shows all the games. And since this is a relatively late game, what is this, 87, something like that? So it's got a whole bunch of games in it. It's got the Lurking Horror disc.
June 87, yeah.
June 87. Okay, so I got the Lurking Horror disc for the Apple II, and typical of Infocom games, it's kind of splotchy because the glue kind of bleeds through. Alas, it's one of the bad things about them. I've got the Get Help Fast, Send for Official Hint books and maps and such. I've got the fabulous Savings on Suspect card. I can return this coupon, get $25 off Dave Liebling's Suspect. Suspect, as a reminder for our listeners, was the game with the world's worst, the cover art that looks like it was drawn by Dave Liebling using his offhand. Terrible. I got a warranty card. And then we get the fun stuff. So I've got the technical manual for The Lurking Horror, which sounds boring, but is basically the thing. I guess it is boring. It's the thing that would normally come in a browsy that tells you the sample transcript and like how to type commands and such. So if you've never played an Infocom game, this would be the thing that was normally the second half of a browsy that would tell you, like, here's a sample and type the word look to get this and that sort of stuff. And then I've got the GUE at a glance, a guide for freshmen. And this would normally be the first half of a browsy, but it's just a standalone thing. It's the George Underwood Edwards Institute of Technology. And it says presented as a public service by the GUE Tech Social Committee. And this is kind of a guide that would be given to freshmen as they go to a new university. So imagine that this was in your freshers package or whatever. So it has some information about school traditions. It's got a rough sort of map of the campus. It's got some information about GUE tech jargon, which I want to come back to because I think one of them is wrong. Some interesting, like it's got some favorite hangouts, like where to go get pizza and such. It has a couple of things that are needed in the game, like you've got your own little directory and you've written down some stuff and maybe there is passwords written down or who knows. So if you're going to play the game, you might want to be browsing this thing, place to enter your class schedule and that sort of thing. So this is the piece in the box that sets the stage. And I think Lurking Horror is one of those games where it's particularly good with setting up the world of the game. I thought that was really like inside the game. Mm-hmm. I really felt that a good sense of place. And then the two fun feelies, one is my student identification card. So it's a plastic little laminated card, although it's very thin, thinner than a normal one would be. And it is my George Underwood Edwards Institute of Technology student ID card, which has my student ID number on it with a barcode and a place where I can sign the back, and it says how it's not a credit card. So if you've been to university, you're used to one of these things. And then not mentioned on the box, and I think intentionally not mentioned on the box, there is also a creepy caterpillar thing. So it's one of those rubber, this is the sound of rubber. Doesn't make much sound. It's a creepy little rubber caterpillar, kind of gooey, which I guess was supposed to be like a surprise. You would dump out the box and there'd be like a creepy 50-armed little rubber centipede thing. I guess centipede, not caterpillar. Problem is, at least in my copy, and I think this is how it normally came, it's pressed between two clear sheets. Mm-hmm. of plastic. I think as a protective thing, because since it's that gooey rubber, it probably would stick to or stain some of the contents of the box or maybe even wreck the disc. So because of that, it's in this little plastic packaging, in a sense, because there's a top and bottom sheet, which really means if it comes out, it doesn't feel at all like you've actually found a bug. It feels like you found a feely. So I think that defeats the jump scare aspect of it. But it's a neat feely, though. I like it.
So I had read that it says on the back of the box that it includes rattlesnake eggs.
Does that say that on mine? My box does not say that. It shows a picture moldering inside every Lurking Horror package. Your Lurking Crew disc, a guide to George Underwood Edwards Institute of Technology, and your GUE Tech student identification card. And the picture only shows those.
So the rubber bug is not mentioned either.
The rubber bug is not mentioned. Why would there be rattlesnake eggs?
I don't know. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, it doesn't make sense in the game. Did I miss a part? Did you get a snake?
No. Oh, no. I don't have the box, but I think
how
I read
would you have like a
digital antiquarian?
Aren't rattlesnake eggs like little tiny like a handful of little beads?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is it rattlesnake eggs like those things like maracas? Like they'd be eggs and you shake them and it sounds like a rattlesnake?
Maybe. Let's see. It says the new cheap packaging. I'm reading Digital Antiquarian. The new cheap packaging was hard for fans to overlook, as was the fact that the principal feely in the Lurking Horror, a packet of rattlesnake eggs, had nothing to do with the game. It looked like something that someone in marketing had plucked off the discount rack at the local novelty shop, which in fact it largely was.
Well, yeah, because this box doesn't have the Browsy attached. Like, it's, you can tell it's a bit of a cost savings at this point making the game, but it's still a nice package. I still quite like it.
Okay. So, and then it says it was replaced actually with your bug friend there.
I found a bug in the game.
You're hilarious.
I am.
So I want to point out that GUE, I mean, it says George Underwood Edwards, but really, I mean, Great Underground Empire.
Right.
Yeah.
I got that. 30 something games in, I'm catching on.
Sure. You want to talk about the sense of place. I mean, basically this thing takes place at MIT,
yes.
And there's a whole article about, on the Digital Antiquarian, a separate article about like how the map is like MIT and like what they did. There's a building in the game called the Brown Building, but in reality it's the Green Building, and it's, you know, it's a tall building. Like, anyway, so there's like basically a map of like all the things they make reference to. Now, I've only spent a couple of afternoons in my lifetime at MIT.
Me too.
I have been there a couple of days. I went to a museum. I went to a couple of meetings and had a lovely time, but so in my very limited experience there, I really got the sense in this game that, oh yeah, I'm in this place that I've been.
Yeah.
So
I had a strong sense of place as well. Not only because I too have spent maybe half a dozen different days on campus, but it really felt like a very real place, especially given that it's like a horror game. So it's a real place, but there's goo monsters and stuff. But just the fact that like you're going down corridors, and some of the map is a little weird, but it's weird in that way where you think, it's like when you watch a movie based on a true story, and sometimes you think, it'd be better if it wasn't based on a true story, because what did happen isn't interesting enough. It'd be better if the alligator ate him or something. It's this case here where there's a couple of rooms and stuff that are a little weird, where I think, oh, I think that's done just because that's how it's like in real life. But that said, I had a really strong sense of place, of like really being there. Like, it was one of those the best graphics are in your mind kind of thing. Like, I did really feel like I was in this game. So I dug it.
Yeah. Me too.
I did have trouble with the parser, though. The whole
me
thing.
Too. I mean, I right out of the game, I'm not sure this is so much a parser problem, but I mean, right out of the beginning, it's like you're in a computer room and there's posters and signs on the wall and pizza boxes everywhere. And like literally my first five moves were read poster, examine sign, an open pizza box, and those objects didn't exist.
Yep.
It was just like, and it felt like a really inauspicious start to the game for me. And
me
I thought,
too.
Oh,
I got worried. I had the exact same early experience.
Yeah, and I was really, oh, this game is going to be terrible. But besides the lack of objects, there were some parser problems. I had a lot of where'd my notes go? I just had a lot of throw. What I'm going to make up things. Throw knife at wall. And it would say, how do I do that with a wall? And I got that a variation of that message 100 times.
I absolutely got that same
frustrated.
Message. I found the parser, especially for a 1987 game, I found the parser very frustrating. All the time, the description would talk about objects that were then not nouns in the dictionary, where it would just say, I don't know what you're talking about, whatever. This was one point where you get a note. So I've got a bunch of examples, which I think we have to wait for after spoiler defense. But here are two interesting ones. So when I'm reading a note and it says the name signed to the bottom is oddly familiar. So I type read name. I don't know the word name. Examine signature. I don't know the word signature. Like, I tried that a bunch of times. But then finally, the game tells you without prompting about five moves later, it says, suddenly you remember why the graduate student's name was familiar. He was a miss. Like, and like, what? So it's used as a thing, but it won't let you look at you think it would. I just, that kind of thing is really frustrating because it talks about it once and then later brings it up again, but in no way can I mention this thing. So I was like, how could no playtester have tried this? And that I found very frustrating. A weird one is in this game, you get a bottle of Coke that is used in the game. And so you think, bottle of Coke, you can drink it. So I think because you would assume it's not branded, I type drink cola. I don't know the word cola. It's like drink Coke? Delicious. Contains caffeine. I was like, so I actually have to use the word Coke? And so you specifically, I mean, is with product placement, it's kind of strange, but you have to specifically say the word Coke.
Hmm. Strange. My find the verb moment was when we're standing on a thing and there's a ladder up there with you, but you need to climb down. And so you have to get the ladder to hang down from where you are to a lower place than you are. And I spent way too long trying to make it understand what I wanted to do.
I don't remember. I remember the place you're talking about.
Yeah.
So 100%. Like, I know where you are when there's the ladder. And I think I died up there. But I don't think died by falling. I think I died by a snot monster with one eye who ate me. welcome to the Lord's Horror.
That'll happen.
I was eating my snot monster. So I'm pretty sure that's where that happened. But I don't remember struggling with that. But I did struggle in a bunch of places. And I find that, I mean, again, I really like this game, but I found the parser kind of unforgivably bad. It's unforgivably bad as a parser. Because in 1987, I mean, come on, man. Just use some of that sweet, sweet Activision money to get yourself a better parser.
Might as well talk about the vocabulary as long as we're here. The vocabulary in this game is 773 words.
None of which are signature or cola.
Sure, yeah. which is, yeah, significantly less than the average of 976.
So I think what happened was, like, there's the map is, actually the map isn't even that big, but the world seems very well described. So I think there's a ton of description in this and a lot of great writing, which I really, really did enjoy. And I think that muscled out other things on the disc. It felt like a game where things were trimmed for space. And I suspect it would have, we recently played a game that was one of the ones where it takes 128K instead of 64.
Right.
I think this game needed to be one of those.
And this could have been, because this was one of the later games. They absolutely could have made that choice.
Again, sweet, sweet Activision money.
Sure, but I guess they didn't because they wanted it to work on some of the lesser 8-bit machines like the Commodore 64.
When you say lesser, I think Commodore 64 as well. Suck it, listeners. That's what we think. Let's bring back the 1980s Flame Wars.
I think you're right. It's probably, they had to squeeze it in there. There were 71 rooms, average being 81. This was another one of those games where I could keep the map in my head.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's even a maze that isn't a maze because of a thing. Like, so I was like, excellent, much better than scrambling around the dark. So I like that.
See, we'll talk about that later because for me, it was a maze that I made it through.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about it. Yes.
Yeah. So 71 rooms, average 81, objects, 44, average is 36, and deaths, 25, average being 30.
I got at least four or five of the deaths, including a death near the end that I think is my favorite bad ending. So those of you who are listening after the spoiler fence this episode, you'll get to hear about what I think is my favorite you've lost, but I'm like, I lost and it's awesome. So got a really good bad ending right at the end of the game. So which tickled me to no end. I really love it. The map and the number of objects did feel small to me. Not so small that I felt I was being cheated. Like, the vocabulary was bugging me that it was missing stuff. So that annoyed me. The fact that the map was on the slightly smaller size and the number of objects, well, first of all, the number of objects you can also carry was limiting in a particular place that I had to spend a long time figuring out how to get to an area. But they didn't bother me. Like, I don't mind a map that's not as sprawling and giant as the Zork games. Like, we've played some games like Ballyhoo and such where I can keep the map in my mind, and I actually quite enjoy that. I think that helps me stay in the game. And when I'm not playing the game, when I'm just at work and I'm supposed to be working, and instead I'm thinking about the puzzles and the Lurking Horror, which I spend a lot of time doing, it's nice to be able to kind of close your eyes and just think about the map and where everything is and where else you might go and try a thing. And so I think there's an advantage to a map that is small enough you can keep it in your mind, because it can extend the sense of place and the sense of playtime outside of just when you're sitting at your keyboard and looking at a printed map. So I actually dig it.
Yeah, me too. But I mean, this, I would have thought, I really would have thought that this was above the threshold of a size that I could keep in my head. Because we talked about this last episode with Wishbringer. We were just like, 52 rooms in Wishbringer. Yes, we can keep this in our heads. Not a problem. But I mean, this is 71 rooms, and okay, and some of them are a maze and whatever. But I don't know. I would have thought this would be above what my little brain could handle, and it really wasn't. And I was just like, okay, and it wasn't like it broke my rules of. It was a lot of little areas that basically you had access to all at once. So I don't know. It was just like, oh, I'm going to go from this building to this building, and you have to go through this passageway, and then you go up, you know. So it was a lot of, I don't know. And somehow my brain was just like, oh, I'm at MIT. Okay. I've been there twice. I've got this.
Mm-hmm. I found that I could keep the map in mind, but I was keeping it mentally in mind incorrectly. And this is something we'll have to talk about more after the spoiler fence, but this is a map that is essentially 3D because there's multiple buildings and you go up and down in those buildings. And so there's the upper areas of a couple of buildings that have a few stories. And then there's the lower levels, which have a few stories as well. But my mental map just kind of laid those out on a flat plane, I think. And that messed with me for a while. Like, and so in my mind, it's like, oh, well, over on the left, I'm going to call that floor two, and over on the right, I'll call floor three. And I just kind of teleport myself between them as I'm mentally moving around.
Right.
And that is to your detriment in this game. This is a game where it's important to remember it as 3D. And so I like it. I like that it made it a 3D map, which is a pain for mapping on paper, but then use that in the game. And so I thought that was good. So in some of the puzzles and that kind of stuff. So I dug it, but I was able to keep it in my mind for the most part as well.
Yeah, I did the same thing though, as I did the teleporting, and I didn't envision it as 3D. After I finished the game, in fact, just
it's hard to map a 3D map. Like physically, I find it hard to draw.
I looked up the Inviziclues map.
How did they do it? Because mine's a mess.
It's real pretty, and it's a way that that I haven't seen before. But basically, they stacked the levels so that you can totally tell what room is above what rooms. If you just Google Inviziclues lurking horror, it's the first link. But basically they did it kind of an isometric sort of style. So
okay. Yeah, but see, that'll mess me up when it comes to the cardinal directions, because I want like north to be up on the paper, not north to be northwest on the paper, like diagonal or whatever. It's a difficult thing to map
it both ways.
Yeah. I want it both ways. I want to say open microwave and take funny bones. Oh, okay. So there's a quick question. This won't be a spoiler. It's right at the very beginning. You find funny bones, which are like a food thing. Mm-hmm. Had you heard of those before? What the heck are funny bones?
I think I assumed it was made up for this game. It said it was a snack food made up of chocolate cake and peanut butter.
Okay, I wasn't sure if this was like a popular American thing, like, and we just don't have it in Canada.
No, I don't think we have it here either.
Okay.
So maybe it's a Boston only thing.
It could be. Like, and I wondered if it was something I was supposed to recognize. I mean, it's obvious that it's food. It's described to you as food, so I knew it was a food thing.
That's weird though. They would use a real drink being Coke, but a made up snack.
If it is made up, maybe we'll have a bunch of people are typing us email right now. There's already, we haven't even published this, and there's people already going, oh, they messed up the funny bones.
Well, I'm sure they can send us each a package so we can review funny bones in future episodes.
Okay. The internet says funny bones are a classic Drake's variety. First introduced in 1961, it's a devil's food cake filled with rich peanut butter cream and enrobed with a milk chocolate flavored icing. So it's like a cake with peanut butter. I have never seen this before, ever.
No, I've never heard of this. Huh.
By Drake's, whatever Drake's is. I don't know that brand. It's a snack cake.
I think someone set up that website just to fool you today.
Could be. I hope so. That's awesome. Well done, listeners. Well done. So the game is a horror game, and there's lots of creepy monsters. I want to talk about the comedy stuff too, because frankly, I think there's in some ways more comedy than horror. But it's not horror like zombies horror, really, although it kind of goes for that. It goes for that, like, kind of, it's clearly wanting to be an H.P. Lovecraft thing. So it's kind of supposed to be that creeping, insidious, alienness horror. Although I don't think it really achieves that. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Lovecraft anyway, partly because he was a big honking racist, but also because he was a really great writer, to be honest. But I like kind of the idea of Lovecraft more than the actual Lovecraft stuff, where you've got that, like, the Cthulhu thing and the alien stuff that's so alien it's beyond good and evil, and just seeing it will melt your mind. And, like, so that's what it's going for here. And I don't think it really gets that in the game. It doesn't really achieve that because it has a, it doesn't take itself that seriously, and it's got some comedy stuff, and the comedy undercuts that feeling of creeping dread. But I think it was the right choice because it's an Infocom game, and I like my Infocom games to also be funny. Like, there's graffiti in this, and there's some funny things, and and so I'm actually happy that it ended up being more of a comedy horror with some interesting monsters that can kill you versus just like a take it seriously, everything is dour, you know, Lovecraftian horror. So I'm actually really happy with the way Libbing chose to do the tone, even though it wasn't what I was anticipating.
No, I enjoyed it. Like I said, I don't like horror-y things, but it was funny, and this was no particularly scarier or horrific than some of the monsters in Zork or the Enchanter series or something. It was just marketing. I mean, some of the terrible monsters you need to deal with in Sorcerer or Spellbreaker, it was, you know, the same sort of, here's a terrible, gross monster and it wants to eat your eyeballs or whatever. And yeah. So.
Made me think of that. What's that song? I just want to eat your eyes. Do you know what?
The Jonathan Coulton song.
Yeah.
All right. All we want to do is eat your brains.
Yeah, eat your brains. Yeah. So we don't want to eat your eyes. It's like, anyway, so
It's called R.E. Your Brains. Yes.
Yeah. Hooray for Jonathan Coulton. Everything is awesome. I liked the plot of this game. Like, it's not really plot. I keep coming back to this whole interactive fiction, and it's not really interactive. It's like not an interactive novel. But this does have more of a plot than a lot of the games do. Like, you're set off on a journey, though we'll be playing Journey in the future. So, like, you've got a term paper to do, and then term paper, you go and edit it, and it's suddenly disappearing. And then it's off the computer, it's all garbled. And then you get yourself with help from a hacker person, kind of access to a whole bunch of the map, in a sense, and you're off on a quest, which is to restore your term paper, which is due tomorrow. Like, so you've got an impetus for doing what you're doing versus, like, when you look at Zork, it's just like, I'm going to walk around and just be a big thief hobo. And instead, like, you're trying to do a thing, and then you get sidetracked by the fact that this setting starts to get more and more creepy, and then starts to try to kill you. But at the end of the day, you're still all, what you're trying to do is, in a perfect world, like, restore your term paper. And that gives you a reason for going to, like, certain places. And I like that. And I like that it does have an actual ending too. It's unlike some of the Zork games. It's like, you now have all the treasures, you win. This is like, a thing has been happening, and it gets bigger and bigger, and then it resolves with essentially a boss fight. And that happens in the Enchanter series as well. And I like that. I like a thing that says, here's a reason for doing what you're doing, and it leads to a big boss battle. And that's, you know, that's video games at their heart. And so I like that this is one of the games that does that. So thumbs up for that.
Yeah. Agreed.
I see.
Although I don't think he ever gets his paper finished at the end of it.
Oh, so you didn't get the score of 110 out of 100? No. I unlocked the secret ending, and I got my term paper marked.
Wow.
I got to be disappointed. There's a dream sequence. There's lots of ways to die in gooey ways, which is fun. I think the maze is an amaze, so I'm looking forward to talking to you about that. It's not a game where you're collecting treasures, but it's a game where instead you're collecting objects and then using those objects to solve puzzles. And I prefer that versus the whole go out and find the five gems for their own sake.
Treasure for treasure's sake sort of thing. I strongly agree. Yeah, you basically, every time you come across a thing, you are going, how am I going to use this? When am I going to need this? Some of them are very obvious, and some of them are not. And some, you know, so, but yeah, basically you're trying to think of uses for things the whole time. And if you use it once, am I going to need it again for some other thing in the future?
Yes. I've got under my notes, cool and creepy. Here's a description from the game to give people an idea for what it's like. You're up on a catwalk. It says you stand. This is after climbing a thing. You stand up on a catwalk, catching your breath for a moment. Your eyes stray along the strand you climbed because you climbed a rope. It trails along the catwalk where it joins something large and squishy squatting at the far side. A single bright blue eye opens in the squishy mass, and the tentacle, for that's what it is, retracts. The mass almost floats through the spaces in the catwalk railing and drops to the floor 15 feet below. Before you can react, it's gone. Like, so those sorts of things where you're just like, you enter an area and then suddenly part of it is just like, in this case, like a snot monster kind of thing. I like that. Like, I like those moments of creepiness that just aren't a thing you interact with, but just like set the stage. And there's a bunch of those and I dig it. I dig it a lot. There's one point where you're like at an altar kind of thing and it's got like a little slot you can open up and look inside, and what you see almost like melts your brain. Finally you shut it, you're like, so it's got those kind of things that are like, again, cool and creepy, and I dig it a lot. I dig that kind of atmospheric writing, and I think it's in here in spades.
Yes, no, good atmospheric writing and good use of humor and puzzles. I mean, some really good puzzles in here.
Yep. Yeah. Some excellent ones, including one really, really good hard puzzle.
You say that, but okay. So we did something that we don't normally do.
Cheated. Wait, no, we do that all the time.
I didn't use any InvisiClues.
Me neither. I was hell-bent on not doing it because it was my last chance to play a text-only Infocom game in my life that I've never played before. Like, this was my last, so I was bound and determined to not cheat on this.
Me too. However, we did collaborate a little bit.
That
we did
seems we fair to me. That's not cheating. Yes. That's playing with a pal.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Playing with a pal, I think we've kind of determined over the course of doing these, is a legitimate way to play these games. And I knew at one point from something you tweeted that you were slightly ahead of me. So I asked you for help on something. And your hint to me was simply, this object is here for a reason. And that's all you needed to say to me. And I paid more attention to that object. And then that got me way farther than I had. And you know, cause you knew that there was a thing hidden in the thing, and fine, great.
Right. That unlike a lot of this game, that object described is actually a thing that is a thing, not just like a pizza box that it doesn't know what the word is.
Right. Yeah. But then later, let's see, I was,
you were then ahead of me.
Was I? Okay, was I?
When we got to the big puzzle, which we'll talk, I guess, in more detail later.
But there was later, I got to a point where I couldn't figure out what to do next. It was just like I had explored the whole map. I had solved all the problems I knew about. And then I explored the whole map again, carefully rereading. It was like, what am I missing? And how do I, there was one, how do I get past the thing in the wall, right? And you said, here's what it's going to be. Although you hadn't seen it yet, you completely predicted the next puzzle.
I know, I nailed it. I basically said, like, here's what I think we're going to need. Here's what I think is going to happen in this. And I was like, totally right. I wasn't even there yet.
You were totally right. Even though you hadn't even, So
it was like my proudest moment.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I went and I did what you suggested. And the thing that you said revealed itself to me. And I did exactly what you had said, even though you had never not seen these rooms or these objects, and it totally solved the puzzle. And then I was able to get into the next part of the game, and then I ended up finishing the game before you did.
And all it was a combination of realizing spatially where things line up on the map, that there was an object we had that hadn't been used yet that you have to use in a certain way. And I'm like, well, that's still a thing that's left. And a puzzle from another game we played forever ago that wasn't the same, but similar enough that you start to know like how these puzzles work. There's a thing from Hollywood Hijinks, and combining those, I was like, I think if you go here, you'll be able to do this and then go here and then use this object in this way. And that's going to do a thing. And then it was right. I was kind of actually surprised. So I got lucky. So I've been trained by these games to start to anticipate the way they're going to do puzzles. And it was it was a great puzzle. It was very, very, very enjoyable.
Now that you know how to solve all the games, you're out of games.
Yes, finally. I finally can do that. And the games were over. I've graduated. I guess that's the whole point. One thing I got wrong completely.
Graduated GUE.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. I've got my student ID card already, too. There's a character in this. There's a few characters. There's like Urchin, and there's this one. I don't want to say what it is, but there's a person or a thing in this that I was 100% sure was the big bad. Like, okay, here we go. This, I'm going to be fighting this. This is what and completely misread that. So I might have anticipated one puzzle, but I took a whole bunch of notes about how I'm 100% sure this is the thing that's going on. This is who I'm supposed to battle. Wrong. Just completely undercut me. And I don't know if it was done on purpose. So it's something I want to talk about on the other side of spoiler fence too. Like, did you get that sense, or did I just like read into this completely and just happen to be wrong?
I did not get that. Wrong. I think I thought it was a fun little friendly character. I thought it was the hopping mailbox of this game.
Okay. I'm thinking of a different person. I'm thinking about a person, but not the thing you're saying then.
Oh, huh. Then I don't know. We'll have to talk after the spoiler fence. I did have a thing, however. Okay, so again,
as we're butting up against the spoiler fence, like what can we say? What can't we say?
Yeah. We're gonna get more and more obtuse, you know. I at one point, you know, was whatever, got up in the morning, took a shower, and I specifically was just like, I'm gonna use my shower time to think about how to solve a puzzle, you know, because sometimes you have your best, you know, shower thoughts, your revelations on things in the shower. So, and I came up with maybe three solutions to things to try, and actually none of those paid off. But then I think next day or whatever, sometime later, I took a nap, and unbidden, the solution to the final big bad came to me in my sleep, and it was
which is great because this game opens with like a dream sequence where something comes to you. So nice.
Yeah.
You were in the zone, man.
I was in the zone. Yeah. Anyway, it was just like amazing. I like woke up from my little nap and I was just like, I've got to try this. And like, sure enough, that was it. You know, it was a matter of finding exactly the right words to use and the order and the pacing, but that was the answer indeed. So
nice. Nice.
I also learned a few words and relearned some words.
Oh, tell me what word?
This word was from the Browsy, actually, the word Hellenic, which means the branch of the Indo-European language family comprising classical and modern Greek. I bet you knew that word because you know all sorts of...
I did because the Hellenic Republic was basically Greece.
You know things.
And so when you think in terms of... Anyway, yes, I knew that one.
The word moraine, which... I'm sure I learned in a,
you've been called.
Yeah.
What a moraine.
What a moraine. I'm sure I knew this word from a geology class in college years ago, but I'd forgotten it. Moraine is a mass of rocks and sediment carried down and deposited by a glacier. The word palp, each of a pair of elongated segmented appendages near the mouth of an arthropod. So it's the part of a bug.
I think of them as spidery things.
Okay. Yeah.
Spider mouths.
I said it's the part of a bug.
Yes, it's that part of a bug indeed.
Yeah. Stygian, very dark. I'm sure I've learned that word before in these games.
And also Cornerstone, I made the joke about Styx because Stygian comes from Styx and the Cornerstone album when we did the thing at Kansas Fest about how Cornerstone is not just a non-game by Infocom. It's a good album by Styx. So you learn Stygian then too.
Sure. I definitely learned the word hyrax, a small, thick-set, herbivorous mammal.
That was what was new for me. I was going to say I had learned a word and it was hyrax. I don't know if that's a common word for like other places. I think of it as basically like a gopher kind of thing. In my mind, that's what it is. I learned that they're also called a rock rabbit, which is a better word for them. I would remember that.
A rock rabbit
or a dassy, I think, but rock rabbit. I had never heard of this animal before. And like, you find a hyrax. I'm like, what the heck is a hyrax?
Yeah.
So I had to Google that one.
Those are the words that I learned.
Stacks and stacks of words.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Anything else before the spoiler fence?
Nope.
No. Okay. So you finished. You won. You got your 100 points.
Finished. I won. And I got my 100 points. Okay. So and I died along the route multiple times. I think at least 4 or 5 times I died. But I didn't have to cheat. I did not have to cheat. We discussed stuff, but there was no cheating. I looked up no InvisiClues, no map, no online hints, nothing. So I went out on a high note because there's not been many of these games where I was able to do that.
Yeah, me too. I did not cheat, although I did, you know, like I said, talk to my buddy Carrington who gave me some ideas, but I'm not calling that cheating.
No, you're not. Like, talking it out together is just like, it's a thing that I think that's fair game. That's what people did back in the day. Like, if you're playing this back then, play it with people. Right. So yeah, totally fair. I call that not cheating. I say that we finished this without cheating.
I agree. And I appreciate when I did ask you for help, you gave me this like the lightest, you know, you didn't tell me what to do.
But yeah, this is a thing that exists in the game and not in a way that it's like, oh, obviously you're going to pick that up and beat up the monster with it. It's just like, here, be aware that that's a word in the dictionary.
Yeah. Right. So good game.
Great game. Loved it. Totally lived up to the hype. I didn't like the parser. Parser gave me a bunch of problems. But I love the setting. I like the plot. I really liked the writing, both the creepiness and the funny bits and the atmosphere and the fact that when you're in the elevator, you can read the graffiti. Like, so there's like, it gave me all the stuff I was hoping that this game would give me, which is a lot given that for 3.5 years, I've hyped it up in my mind as like, it's going to be the one. And it was totally the one. It is not, I think, my favorite of the Infocom games. In fact, I'm pretty sure it is definitely, I'm pretty sure it's definitely not. So that's where my mindset is. But I absolutely adored it from start to end. The parser bugged me at the very beginning, so I got worried. But overall, I'm delighted that I played it. It gave me what I wanted from the game. I just adored it. What about you?
I really liked it. I mean, I didn't expect much from it. I didn't know what to expect. But I was very pleased. I liked the story. I liked the humor. I really enjoyed the puzzles. I really thought it held up, and I thought it was a very strong game and a strong way to go out.
I agree. Yes, I'm very happy that our last one of the text adventures was a good one, and we're not sitting here going, okay, so that's Sea Monster, Seascape, or whatever the sea one was that we didn't like. I can't remember his name.
Right.
So yeah, really pleased. I think Dave Liebling is a very good game maker.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I see. Would you say this is a good first one? Somebody's never played one of these. They've gone this whole journey. They came to this. Should they dive in? Should they start here?
Yeah. I'm going to say based on the fairness of the puzzles, I'll say yes. If you're willing to fight parsers a little bit and you're willing to do your mapping, this is not a bad place to start.
I think it could be a first game. I suspect if you've never played an Infocom game before, especially if you've never played a text adventure at all before, you would 100% need help. We solved a big puzzle, I think, because of having played a bunch of these games before. I never would have solved that otherwise.
Yeah, that's true.
But I do think it's fair. I think a lot of other games, you'd have to look up the answer because there's just no way to know it. We've played some games where the puzzles just seem to be there to sell InvisiClues. Whereas I think if you're decent at these games, you can actually finish this one. So I think it can be somebody's first Infocom game, but it shouldn't be your first interactive fiction game. Don't be your first text adventure. But if you wanted to, you could absolutely dive in and say, I want to, it's not as hard as Ark. So could do worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hear 11-year-olds can beat this in an afternoon.
Okay, before we move on to the spoiler fence, I have a surprise for you.
Ooh, is it a gooey spider in a box?
It's something like that.
Excellent.
Yes. So as you know, the Amiga version of this game had sounds.
Oh, I forgot to talk about that. Yeah, and both of us, I did not go and play the sound version. So I have not heard the sounds.
Me neither.
I was tempted.
I downloaded an Amiga emulator and sort of had it working, and then I forgot how to use it and decided, just, you know what, I'm going to go with Pitch Dark. I know how to use it.
Yeah.
And however, our friend, Andrew Plotkin years ago made a little piece of software called a Blorb tool, which extracts files from Infocom Blorb data files. And I learned how to extract all the sound files and get them into Audacity. And I can play them so we can hear them.
Excellent. That's very exciting. This is an excellent surprise.
So I only know like the numbers of them. I don't know what they go with. And some of them, it's, I think, obvious, and some aren't. So here's the first one.
I hear watery death.
Sure. Here's the next one.
Screamy death.
Yeah. Let's see here. You have a, I think everything's death. Yeah, I don't know. I can't imagine what that one was, but okay. Here's the next one.
Squeaky door death.
Yeah, I think that's like opening the hatch or something.
There's like a tomb in this, but you don't open it. There is a thing that you open to look into, but there must be like a, that definitely sounded like a, like an iron grate or something that needed oil. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the next one.
Elevator death.
Elevator death. Not everything has to be a death.
That's wrong. This game, everything has to be death.
In looking at the waveform, you can clearly see where they spliced the two sounds together.
I can also hear it.
Yeah, you know, you can hear it too, yeah. Here's the next one. That was short. Let's do it again.
Opening a package of funny bones? What do you think that was? A crunch of some sort?
Yeah, I don't know. Crunch, crackle of paper or...
Crumpling up your term paper and throwing it away in frustration.
How much... Not sure how much fright these...
Because that wasn't like the sound of like your bones being crunched or whatever. It wasn't like that kind of death.
No, I don't think so. No. It sounds like paper or... Yeah. I think the only way these would be scary is if like you forgot that you had your volume turned all the way up and you have a partner sleeping in the same room that you have your Amiga and you're playing your game and all of a sudden it goes.
Yes, exactly. And if you just forgot that and they just saved as a surprise, it makes noise at one place really late in the game, it would make you jump.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's got to be from early on. There's like a dream sequence where there's a bunch of people kind of praying to a undead giant god thing or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that's what that is.
I think so. I thought that it could be near the end where there's also a group of people.
Oh, right. At the end, there's also a group of people that, yes. I think it's the first one, though, because that's got too much of a rhythm to it. Mm. The end people would just be like, oh, kind of thing. So. I have died that way in this game.
Yep. Oh, that one borders on spoiler.
Oh, totally right, yes. But you don't know when it's going to happen, but yes. 100% I know when that one gets played.
Ooh, that was loud in my headphones, sorry.
That was loud for me too. That's a scream, I think.
I think so. Yeah. Sounds like a pterodactyl, but there's no pterodactyl.
Okay, I was thinking the exact same thing. Like some sort of giant bird scream versus a person scream.
Right.
But not Big Bird.
No.
But a Big Bird.
That'd be sad.
I think that's the... Actually, I don't know. I can think of two places that could be, both of which, if I say them, would be spoilery. One involves a symbol on the ground, and one involves a tunnel full of people.
Mm-hmm. Could be. Yeah, I don't know. I listened to that one backwards because it sounded like there was something in there, but there's not.
Ooh, Satanic Panic again.
I know. Music. I know. I'm telling you.
That's the opening to AC/DC's Hell's Bells.
are correct.
What? I guess that's something opening as well.
I don't know. It sounds like someone playing with a reverb filter too long.
Yeah, I don't know where that would be used. That could be that little slot you open up and look in and go crazy. Maybe that's the sound of the slot opening.
Maybe. Okay, only a couple more.
Okay. Blob monster.
Blob monster, sure. I'm sure that's exactly what a blob monster sounds
100%.
Like.
As someone who's encountered them, that's full-on blob monster.
All right, here's the last one.
I don't know.
That sounds like a friendly friend.
Oh, right. Oh, you think that was a thing? It just sounded like...
Sounds like a monster going, ho, 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 or something.
I guess. That one I can't place.
Reduce these to 8-bit, you know, crappy sound, and they all sound... It could be many things.
Right, exactly. Any of them could be anything. So that was 13, 14 different sounds, though. But that's something I didn't get. I played the game, the Apple II version. I like Pitch Dark too much. I was tempted to go off and play it, but I was like, do I want to play an emulator? And what if it crashes partway through? And I've enjoyed playing these games a certain way. And I kind of wanted to have, like, play it the same way I've played a bunch of the games through the podcast so far. I was more in a nostalgic mood than one to explore a new way. So it would have been... Nice to have the sounds, I think, but I'm happier the way I played it.
Yeah.
I'm glad I heard the sounds, though, because I had not heard them yet, and now our listeners have heard them, too.
The only other game that had sounds was Sherlock on the Amiga and Macintosh versions, but A, I didn't know how to use the Blorb Tool sound extractor then, and also I hated Sherlock and wasn't going to give it the time of day. So. All right. Great.
I like Sherlock.
All right. We've already established that our next game will be the graphical game Shogun. What if we love them? What if we're just like, Infocom should have been doing graphics the whole time?
I mean, it could be. I want to go with an open mind. I absolutely want to go with an open mind. But the reality is, not knowing anything about these games probably indicates they're not the best ones, because for 25, 30 years, I have wanted to play these games. And so you hear about them. They're just in the zeitgeist. And like, people mention this stuff.
Unsubscribe. I'm out.
And people, nobody talks about that. Like, we've had listeners write in and say, oh, they really liked Journey. Like, in particular, people have called out. They like Arthur or whatever. Mm-hmm. But as a rule, I don't recall a lot of times where people said, oh, I love Infocom games, but the best ones they ever did is when they added graphics. Like, that's just not a thing I've heard over the last three decades. So I'm trying to keep an open mind. I suspect I will really like them, but it doesn't sound like any of those games are anybody's favorite. I'll often hear people say, oh, my favorite games were whatever. Nobody ever lists those ones, it seems. So we'll see. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're the best. I hope they're the best.
Could be.
We'll see.
We'll find out.
Okay, so shall we cross the spoiler fence and start talking about puzzles and monsters?
I think it is time to cross the spoiler fence. And here's how it goes. If you haven't figured this out by now, then you haven't been paying attention. Carrington and I are about to cross the spoiler fence. We are going to give solutions to puzzles. We are going to ruin the game. If you have if you think you want to play this game, and you should, stop listening now. And you can come back later after you have played the game. If you have already played the game, or you are sure you are never going to play the game, then you are welcome to come with us across the spoiler fence, where we will ruin the game that, as far as we haven't already.
Well put.
Mm.
My first point I want to say is, you go down into the basement corridors, and there's this altar. I talk about how you find this altar, you can open up a little door, you look inside, alien madness. The altar... Yeah. As much as, like, I'm enjoying the setting, the reality is that altar was too easy to find, or was like, felt it like it was too close or whatever, because you go down an elevator, you move some boxes, and wham, you're in a corridor that leads directly to an ancient alien madness altar. Like, it's like, this would have been found during one of MIT's famous scavenger hunts. Oh, sorry, scavenger hunts. Like, there's no way this thing would have stayed hidden. You know what I mean? Like, so that kind of pulled me out of it a bit. I'm like, you gotta bury this stuff a little more. There's no way this is just like a hidden altar that nobody's found.
No, I think they needed you to find it early on. so
oh, I agree. I think it works for the plot, but it didn't work for the. I should have had a wall I had to knock over with the. You use a forklift to move these things, which is fine. That's an easy puzzle.
It was a fun little puzzle.
I totally liked it. But, pile of garbage in one room. Two rooms to the west is a scavenger. Is a forklift. Drive the forklift over. Move the stuff. You have to move it. I think 3 or 4 times. Totally felt fair because it says you move it a bit, and then suddenly it says okay, you've created a path. Very easy puzzle. Very fair puzzle. Totally okay with it. But I mean, that thing is just sitting there. Like, it should have been instead. You can jam the forklift into a wall or something. But then I guess they didn't want to use that because the whole knocking a wall down later. But whatever. It felt like it was too easy to find. Mm-hmm. Should be a hidden passage. So a small plot point, but I just want to bring it up because I'm picking some nits.
All right. Fair enough. I had a confusion where like you outside the brown building. I think it said like there's a giant mass here, and you can't do anything with it. And I thought it was like, you know, an alien bug or something that would come alive or something. And it was just, apparently it's just like a piece of art that's actually there at MIT. The mass is just like a thing. I don't know. I thought that was real weird. I was expecting that to be a thing.
Okay. There was a couple of things that I think that was on my list of things I was going to ask you about that I'm like, is that a thing? Like we talked about the funny bones, which I now know what they are. Mm-hmm. What are the funny bones for? In the end, I gave them to the urchin who eats them. And I don't know if that helped me get more info out of the urchin or not, but was there like a better use? The Coke I had to drink because I got tired. You drink the Coke, the caffeine wakes you up. That's easy.
Right.
But what was the purpose of the funny bones?
I don't think there's any real purpose to the funny bones except, okay, so the InvisiClues, which I read after I played the game, said that you can use them like to test the microwave to find out like the right amount of time to heat the Chinese food.
Boy, howdy, do you heat the Chinese food a long time? It's like, I think I ended up having to heat it for like 5 minutes.
That's a long time
in a microwave. But were microwaves in the 80s like not as powerful or something? If I stick a carton of Chinese food in my microwave right now for 5 minutes, I am blowing up the floor of my condo building. Like, so, it would be so hot.
We had
cook a turkey in 5 minutes.
When I was a kid, we had a microwave, and my stepfather stepdad brought home this microwave that looked like, I mean, the thing was huge and
like all the best technology.
It was just enormous and like super lined, and the thing was, you know, you turned it on, the lights would dim. So I'm not sure if my vision of what a microwave was in the 80s, you know, with a stepfather who worked for a defense contractor, and God knows, you know, what this machine had been doing.
It wasn't a microwave, or were you just using it as a microwave? Here, kid, this'll heat food.
Among other things. Right. So, anyway, but yeah, 5 minutes is the time. And basically, I mean, I didn't use I heated the food for 3 minutes. I took it to the hacker and he said, you know, not warm enough. And then I went back, I started over, heated it for 6 minutes. And he was just like, oh, you've ruined the shrimp. And, you know, so I just did trial and error to find that. But I eventually, I mean, late in the game for the maze part, if you don't do it the way you did it, you have to leave a bunch of stuff around in this 10 room maze in order to tell the rooms apart. And
on your shoulder?
Okay. So the hand only tells you, it has to be wearing the ring.
Well, sure. What else do you do with a ring? You have a hand, you have a ring.
Right. So at one point I put the ring on my hand. Nothing happened. I put the ring on.
And the ring is the Hyrax, by the way. Like, it was like, the Hyrax, you examine it, it tells you about a ring. I'm like, okay, you could have said ring. What's with the Hyrax? Sure,
I put the ring on the disembodied animated hand. Mm-hmm. And nothing happened, but this was well before the maze. And then whatever, I restored games.
Oh, but you hadn't brought the hand back to life yet?
No, I had.
Oh, okay.
I had, but yes, I had. The ring on the hand, on the animated hand, only is helpful in the maze. Before then, it doesn't have any effect.
No, but it's cool. You're walking around with a hand on your shoulder the world's neatest zombie pirate. And, like, that is enough.
Anyway, what I'm saying is, by the time I got to the maze, the ring was no longer on the hand. I'd experimented with it. It didn't do anything.
Right.
And
okay.
So, you know.
Oh, then okay. Yeah, right. I found the vat. Did you microwave the hand? I tried microwaving the hand too. You can kill the hand. You can bring the hand back to life and then you can kill it in microwave.
When I tried to put hand in microwave, it just said the hand runs to the other shoulder. What happens when I didn't get it to work? What happens when you do it?
You kill it again. It moves around and then it dies. It stops moving. So you can re-kill the hand. So that was cool. But yeah, I had the hand.
Did you microwave the rat?
I did not microwave the rat.
I didn't. I just thought.
I tried to bring the dead rat back to life, I think. I think I put the rat in the vat.
You can put the rat in the vat and then it reanimates and then it runs off. And
that was, I think, the original title of the game. The Rat in the Vat.
Yeah, the threat of lawsuit.
Forget Lovecraft.
Seuss,
they went for Seuss. H.P. Seuss. The Rat in the Vat. So I was wrong so many times during so many episodes, but in this particular instance, mm-hmm. I was wrong about who the big bad would be. And then I was again wrong about who the... two times, I might have called the one puzzle, but two times I've got these notes where I am 100% certain I know what's going on, I predict the ending, and I'm wrong both times. wow, boy, how did I get this wrong? So I want to admit that. So the first was the alchemy professor. So the alchemy professor is the one who has the rat or whatever, and has the vat.
He may not be the big bad, but he's no friend to you.
He's no friend. But when I got there, I was like, okay, so bingo, this is going to be my. I'm gonna have to find a whole bunch of stuff and fight this person. Clearly, because you're told by the hacker, go get. Oh, I want to talk about the hacker too. Told by the hacker, go to the alchemy department, and so. That's kind of the thing that set you going. And then when I find the alchemy department, although it's early, it's clearly too early for the end game, you meet the creepy professor who takes you into the back room. And I was just like, okay, 100%, this is going to be the big bad. I'm going to have to find a bunch of stuff to defeat this wizard or something.
Right. Save this thing for later and do it
definitely,
last, right?
Definitely, because it's totally going to be, because it's the whole point of everything. And it's a creepy professor and it's got this is going to be the main thing. But what turns out, he tries to do a thing to you, puts you in a pentagram, and you just mess up the pentagram and get out, and it's a bit of a timed puzzle. But then bingo, another bigger bad comes and completely eats the professor. I'm like, wow, I called that one wrong. So I dug it. I liked that a lot. It took me 5 or 6 times to get through that scene because it was a timed puzzle. And I didn't, though, just to stop for a second. So what happens is you get out of your pentagram, you move the box or chest or whatever to reveal the trap door, then you go down through the trap door, and you got to do that in 5 moves or something, because mm-hmm. then the thing he's been summoning shows up and explodes him all over the room. But because you're down in the trap door, below that you hear it happen. It kind of describes that this big noise and there's explosion and splash sounds or whatever. So I didn't go back up into the room because I thought, well, that's going to be off limits to me, or it's full of monsters or whatever. So it took me way longer to finally try that area again, which is where you find the Hyrax, because I just ducked down and closed the door. And then you hear massive monster and explosions or whatever. I'm like, well, I'm not going back in that. Clearly I'm going to die. But I didn't even try it.
I did just the opposite. It was like, ooh, that sounds fun. What happened there?
So yeah, it's totally on me. So it took me so long to find the Hyrax. So there was a time in the game where I was also walking around going everywhere I could and didn't know where to go because I didn't even have the Hyrax yet or access to the vat to do other stuff. And it was only, in fact, I think it was when I realized the dead rat or the severed hand might be used in the professor's vat o' life. I'm like, oh, you know what? I should go back there and see if I can actually get access to the vat. And turns out you can just go in the room. It's just full of splattered professor.
Right.
So I dug that. The other big bad I thought was certainly going to be when I got down to the near the end, you go past all the urchins, you come to a door, and then you've got your master key from the hacker that's going to open this ancient door to the big bad's mausoleum or whatever. And I'm like, okay, the master key that I get from the hacker unlocks this ancient wooden door at the bottom of a wet tunnel filled with zombified urchins. I'm totally suspicious. Hackers clearly set this up. That's what's going on. Hackers. No, I'm wrong on that one again. I was so sure 2 times that I was like, I get it. I know how this ends. I got this, everyone. Wrong both times. 100% wrong.
I thought for a minute that it was the hacker, because you're there and there's the big bad there, and then all of a sudden the hacker shows up, and I thought for like a move or two, like, oh, you know, he's behind this. He's, you know, in cahoots with.
But no, he's a good guy hacker.
Yeah, he was, and also I love the hacker, but mostly because I totally knew that guy in college. I mean,
okay. Speaking of the hacker, though, going back to I should have brought this before this point of defense, but our goo at a glance guide for freshmen. There is a thing in here, school traditions. Where is it? Some GUE tech jargon. So it's got a whole bunch of things. It explains the dot p. Did you ever use the P suffix? Talks about that, adding P to a word.
I was familiar with it. I've never used it.
In high school, my friends and I used to do that all the time. We'd say food P to... Yeah.
So it's a lisp thing, right?
Yeah, lisp thing, exactly. So we would say food P and say, are you hungry? Totally a thing we did. Maybe I got it from this game. No, I didn't play the game. Got it from... I didn't invent it. People started doing that. And it, weirdly, because in this... Maybe it's just a university jargon thing, but in the example, it specifically gives us something like saying food pee means are you hungry? And that's the specific thing we would mostly say. It was the food pee that we would do. But anyway, right. In this list.
It's like in the jargon file, I'm sure.
Sure it must have been that. Yeah, okay. I got it from. But anyway, I didn't invent it, but I used to say it because I thought it was cool. Anyway, here, hack, noun, a prank. Quote, painting the dean's house pink was a great hack, or verb, to commit a prank. We hacked the dean's house. So that's how it says people in the world of the game, both in the game and the feely, say that's how hack is used. But in the very first room in the game, you see a hacker at a terminal and he does traditional hacking things. Like, make up your mind, game. So it bugged me that he's called a hacker. He does computer hacking things. And that's 100% different than this supposed word of hack that it says we're supposed to use for the jargon. So that kind of bugged me a bit too. Just saying.
Sorry, that ruined the game for you.
Don't ruin the game for me. I changed my mind. I hated it.
You mentioned the lab with the professor in it. And after you blow up the professor, there's a computer in there. And I guess this was kind of a red herring. There's a computer in there, but no floppy disk. And the whole thing started with you lost your paper. Your paper has been transferred over the network to a computer in the alchemy lab. And so here we are in the alchemy lab, and there's the computer that won't boot. And it really seemed to me like there was going to be, you have to find the floppy disk or the dismountable drive or whatever it's called in order to recover your paper. I mean, I thought that might be like a epilogue or something to the game, but it was kind of just a red herring where I guess just saving the world was good enough, and you know, getting an A.
Saving the world is never good enough. I thought the exact same thing. I at that point, again, game I liked, but I was wrong about a lot of things. I thought, okay, so the professor's not the big bad, but clearly what I'm going to do to get to the next step or maybe unlock the next dream sequence or whatever is I'm going to find a disc, remember to come back to the alchemy lab, and I'll use it there. No, it's just, I think they had to put it in because they had said originally go to the alchemy lab. So right. I was wrong about so much of this plot.
Now that we're past the spoiler fence, I just need to go back and say how brilliant you were for when I said something to you like I didn't know where to go next, whatever, and you said you need to think of this puzzle in a 3D sort of way, and you said something like I think that such and such a room is under such and such a room, and the way you're going to get there is by opening the elevator with the crowbar, and then there's going to be some way.
I didn't know about the crowbar because I just knew open the elevator and get like below the elevator.
I thought you said with the crowbar, but you're going to say open the elevator somehow, and then there's going to be something that you're going to attach around the rod, the steel reinforcing rod that's in the wall.
That you're going to attach it to the elevator, probably using the padlock.
And then you said for some reason you're going to have to like attach that chain or whatever. I don't think you use the word chain, but whatever. You attach that chain together with the padlock because the padlock hasn't come into any use yet. And then you're going to attach that to the elevator, and then you're going to make the elevator pull down the wall. You hadn't seen any of that yet.
And I totally nailed it. I was so thrilled. And I knew it worked because you got then past that area. And before I could even get there, you finished the game. I'm like, I totally nailed the puzzle and I'm not even in the room yet. It's like my earliest solution because I had the padlock. In fact, where's my notes? My notes say, I'm getting good at these games. And then brackets finally, AKA game tropes. It says the tomb is locked with a padlock. And then my notes say, first thought, if it's a padlock instead of a lock in a door, 100%, I'm going to need to use this padlock elsewhere. Look for chains or doors, etc., that you can lock to each other with the padlock. So I had that in my mind after having solved the padlock. And then we were talking about it, and I was kind of stuck in the same area, but I and that's why I kept going back and forth with you. I'm like, what is behind that hole? Think about it. I've now looked at my map, and if you think 3D and go, okay, if I go like three rooms west, and then I go up one, and then I go diagonally this way, and then back down, and then two rooms east or whatever, I'm going to be directly north of the room I'm in with that hole in the wall with the reinforcing rod. Well, what's in this room on that wall would be the elevator. I'm like, oh my God, that thing we're looking in looks into the elevator shaft. So there must be a way to get below the elevator. And if there's a rod there, it's got to be, I'm attaching something to rip open that wall. Because both of us were trying to figure out, like, how do we get our bigger stuff? Like, the whole reason for doing this is you got to get past the urchins and they're attached with these cables, and I'm like, I've got an axe and I've got bolt cutters. If I can get either of those down there, I could cut the strings basically on the urchin puppets, the urchin zombie puppets. But both of those objects are too big to go through the tomb. So I'm like, there's gotta be another way to get them down there. What do I do? And it's like, rip a hole in the wall with the elevator. And it was awesome. That was one of my favorite puzzles we've done. I absolutely delightful puzzle.
Yeah, you kind of implied it was like maybe one of your favorite puzzle ever in any of these things. But how could it be if you answered it if you figured it out before you even played it?
But because it's like, that's the point of these things. I mean, I guess because I anticipated, but it's more like, it's one of those things where that was one of my favorite eureka moments where I'm like, I can tell if I go there I'm going to be on the other side of this thing. And you kind of get that moment where you understand the game, you're kind of like seeing the mechanism of the game, which was super fun. And I think the only reason I could solve that is there's a similar puzzle in Hollywood Hijinks, which I don't want to talk about because maybe people haven't gone past the spoiler fence of that one. Yeah. And so this isn't the first time they've done a thing like that. I think if I hadn't already encountered a similar-ish puzzle, then I also wouldn't have thought about like using an elevator in a sense.
Right. My eureka moment was at the end when you, the thing I got in, when I was sleeping, was about electrocuting the way in which to electrocute the baddie.
That took me so long. Yeah, I remember telling you at the end, I'm clearly going to solve it really quickly. And you even text back, good luck with that. Right. And then it took me so long.
Yeah, we were doing the Boston IF meeting. We talked about this a little bit. And you were just like, you said something like you were going to clip your way past the urchins and then the game would be over. I was just like, okay, that's what you want to believe.
Yep.
Because there was the maze after that, and then the wall, and then the final room. And
the final room took me a while to even figure out what to do and then figure out the timing and stuff like that. Yeah, it took me way longer than I thought. I was at like 80 points or 85 points or something. I'm like, I'm going to solve this in 5 minutes, and like a week later.
I liked how the ending worked. But for the maze,
it wasn't even a maze. I had the hand on my shoulder with the ring on, and it just points. You walk in a room and it says you exit, and it says the finger points like north or points north. So you just walk the way the hand points and it walks you right through the maze.
But there was no, I don't know. I didn't like, there was no clue that should happen. I mean, it was just, you got lucky in that you had the right object on the right object at that time. I didn't have the ring on the hand at that point, even though I had previously in the game. If there was like a spark of life or any sort of,
or if it wouldn't let you take the ring back off,
or if it seemed excited or happy, or I don't or whatever, but it had given me no indication that was the right thing to do. Anyway, so I just mapped the maze. You could hold like 10 objects at a time,
which I don't like. And it didn't really bug me that much in this. There's a few times where I had to drop objects, not to mark a maze, but just because like it won't let me hold anymore. So I'm like, okay, let me dump this stuff here. I'll dump things. I think one of the rooms in front of the elevator or whatever I used as my dumping room. I don't like it when I'm forced to do that, though. I don't like that part of info
control. No, me too. So basically I dropped things in each of the rooms and I mapped out the maze, and then I went back and restored or repasted it or whatever I did, and then just walked through the maze because it's the same every time.
I thought there was a plot hole, maybe or plot error at the very end of the game. So at the very end, we'll talk about that because it took me a while. You got the massive big monster and you're basically going to electrocute it. And so there's a box the whole room is full of water. You can cut this cable to expose the make a live cable, and you put it in the box to like zap the monster. It sounds much simpler than it is, but it took me a long time to figure that out. Like, it's such a simple move, but for some reason I found it really difficult. But you have to be wearing the rubber boots or you'll be electrocuted in the water.
Sure.
Okay, so one, why wouldn't you be wearing the rubber boots? You found the rubber boots. Everyone's going to be... So it's not even really a puzzle. Like, who's ever going to go in this room and have taken the boots off? You have boots. You can barely carry enough objects, so you're going to wear all the ones that you can wear. But why isn't the hacker electrocuted? Does he also just happen to walk around wearing rubber boots? Is that like the fashion in 1987? I don't remember.
I enjoyed the vision of me walking around this entire game wearing way before boots. Necessary, wearing rubber boots and electrician's gloves and just like around.
I'm so you get those MIT, things early, but of course you're going to be wearing the insulated gloves and the boots, both of which you need to survive the end.
Right.
But find these things and what else will you do with them?
When I tried to electrocute the hacker,
I tried to do that too.
It said something like, yeah, he's unaffected. And he says something to you like, you know, there's no pain here or something like that. So I think once he's become one with the monster.
Oh, okay. So maybe that's it.
Yeah. I don't know.
Cause it bugged me. I'm like, why isn't he electrocuted? He's standing in the water too. And he does get like, and I'm like, oh, the big bad is here. No, he's actually a good guy and he's dead. Like, oh, sorry, dude. I really thought you were a bad guy for a bit, but the big monster has killed you. And of course, being an H.P. Lovecraft thing, the giant can't even look at it without going insane thing is the actual big bad. I should have anticipated that. Of course, that's going to be the big bad. I died a bunch of times on that. I died a bunch of times through the game. Did you die much in this game, or did you get all the way through and never die once because you're awesome?
Oh, no, I died many times. I'm not sure I died by the blob monster that you've mentioned, but there were some good deaths. What was your favorite? You said there was a great, what was your great surprise, wonderful.
Okay. So let me tell you, okay. I'll mention a couple deaths and build up to it because it's my favorite death. I think it was my fourth death. Yeah. Fourth death where I'm like so close to winning best death ever, maybe of any game. Okay. So my first death was an on purpose death. So, there's this maintenance man who's got a floor waxer and so you have
like
to get
a ride
past,
on floor. Waxer
it's a ride on floor waxer and he blocks your way and you have to get past him. And the way to get past him basically is to cut the power cord and then to dump this wax stuff on the ground. And then he'll get all caught up in the wax and be slippy and stuff. And you get past him. But I want to see, well, what happens if I don't? Like, if I just cut the power cord and the maintenance man comes for me, is he going to kick me out of school? Like, what's the worst that can happen? So I do this on purpose. You actually have to wait a whole bunch of times. Like, you have to really want to die by this maintenance man. But he does eventually kill you. Like, I'd wait, like, I think 5 times, including multiple instances of it saying, like, the maintenance man stares at you with a maniacal intensity, or he stares at... with a maniacal intensity at your throat. Like, it just keeps saying that. He's like insane. I'm like, wait. He's just staring at you, slavering, wait. I'm just like, bring it, dude. And then like, finally, after a ton of waits, it'll finally say, the maintenance man stares with maniacal intensity at your throat. He grabs you by the throat and lifts you off the ground with one hand. The hand feels very cold. Just as you expire, you realize you have never seen him blink. You have died. And I'm like, okay. And then he gives you the whole, maybe it's been all a bad dream, but no such luck and blah, blah, blah. And my score was 30 out of a possible 100 in 243 moves. So quite a bit in by the time I got there and got my first kill. It says graded on a curve, you were in the class of senior. So I got class of senior, graduate student, department head, dean of engineering, and then president of the institute. So I like the ones where it gives you different like ratings. My second death was not on purpose. It was I opened a trap door. I don't think it was a trap door with the professor. It was a different trap door, and it's one of the monster kills. So I open trap door. It swings open easily. A thing like a tentacle with a demonic face wraps slowly around you. The room recedes into a great distance as you are pulled away. Before you die, you see what the tentacle is a part of. Your score is 45 out of possible 100. I'm like, excellent. Killed by a tentacle monster. I love it. And then I turned off the flashlight once in an area that I didn't think was dark. You had a flashlight, but I'm always worried I'm going to run out of batteries. So I'm down in the steam tunnels in an area that I had my little symbol on my map saying that there was light. So it says, turn off flashlight. The flashlight clicks off, leaving you in the dark. Not alone, however. One should never assume the dark is safe. Something just grabbed you from behind and dragged you off to its lair. My God, darn it. So I like those kind of deaths.
I'm not sure that the...
You have died.
Okay. So basically in this game, the monster got into the network, right? It got into the
I think he's being summoned. I think the alchemy people and stuff have been praying to and summoning Cthulhu or whatever. And so therefore, and that madness is soaking its way through MIT or GUE in this case.
I just felt like there was a lot going on that I wasn't sure like how they're connected. There was the professor who was definitely summoning.
It's Lovecraft, baby. They're not always productive. Okay. They're just, creepiness.
And then there was the monster that was definitely getting into the internet, according to the hacker.
Yeah, like the end boss is definitely like an internet squidgy monster. I'm going to use that to take over the world.
But then there's like the blob monster on the roof, and there's some sort of bug monster in the dome.
The bug monster on the dome took me so freaking long to get past. Oh my gosh. Okay, before we get to that though, I want to talk about my favorite death. Then let's talk about dome monster. Okay, my fourth death, so close to winning. Favorite death ever, because remember I got all these other deaths where it's like you have died, oh, you've done this, scores 80 of a possible 100, you have died. So at the very very end, I've got like 90 points or whatever, I'm in that final thing trying to defeat the big bug monster, the big bad, trying to, you know, cut the line with the axe and electrocute or whatever, and I don't know if this didn't happen to you or whatever, but I got like super, super close. So the hacker grabs for you. Join us. Serve the master, he croaks. Some of the creatures leap onto you, biting exposed skin. Cut line with axe. That's my third time trying that. The line parts. The two ends begin to sink towards the water as they straighten out. The hacker is surprisingly strong. He drags you towards the thing in the corner, exhorting you to join it. And at last, forcibly, you do. You are not the first or the last. You have changed. Instead of you have died, you have changed. Yeah. Sometimes during your future existence, you remember your old life. At these times, you wish you had died instead. I'm like, that is awesome. I just thought it was so good. After seeing you have died so many times over like 35 games, you have died, you have died. And this time it's like, you have changed.
Yes.
And it's just like, oh, so good. Yeah.
And I almost like skimmed past it because like I've seen this 100 times and then all of a sudden like, oh, wait, this text is different. You know, you've changed.
It just hit me like a gut punch because I'm like, like you, I'm so used to seeing the words like 4 asterisks, you have died, 4 asterisks, like just over game after game after game and a bunch of time in this game. And this one time, like I'm just right. I'm so close to the end. I'm like, just like I can tell if I could just shave off one move from what I'm doing, I'll be able to defeat this thing. And instead I get absorbed into Cthulhu or whatever. And it's just like, you've changed and you wish you had died. It's like, that is, oh, Dave Liebling, that is just so well done.
That was good.
I was anticipating it and I just adored it. It's like my favorite death. Loved it.
I the part with the rats in the steam tunnel in the tunnels.
Oh, that's creepy,
probably,
right?
That's creepy. That's probably the grossest part. I mean, getting eaten alive by thousands of rats.
I died that way too.
Is way gruesomer than.
But it was expected. Like why this one really punched me is the whole you have changed thing. I didn't anticipate the rats when the sea of rats come at me and I don't have the flame thing I hadn't yet figured out what to do. And so I'm just killed by rats. I'm anticipating I'm going to get eaten by rats. And then I do. And so it doesn't have that surprise.
No,
that
it wasn't surprising, but it was grossly written. And, and so I thought that was kind of cool, but yeah. And that, I mean, for the first quite a while, managed to turn on the steam from the steam pipes, which keeps the rats at bay, so I could explore the whatever it is the west side of the tunnels because the rats were kept at onto the east side
or vice versa,
whatever,
vice versa.
Whatever it was, but and then I tried to figure out the puzzle with the wall and everything. But then I still couldn't get to the side with the rats. And then it took me quite a while to realize that you could actually kill the rats by timing it right so that you could, rather than just like keeping them behind you, you could wait till they're basically starting to chew on your flesh and then turn on the steam. And then that, you know, burns them to death with the steam, which is pretty gross too. So I kind of liked that you could, I liked that puzzle, and that it seemed like you had figured it out when, or it seemed like I had figured it out when really I hadn't figured it out yet.
Yep. I too got eaten by the rats and thought it was gross and lovely. And yep, totally. Yep. So another one we had talked about that I had got past and you were stumped on for a bit, and then you got past as well, was the creature on the dome and the fact that you have to throw the stone at it. And you have to like go down and throw it like earlier to make it jump off the roof. You basically throw the stone at it. The stone goes through it because it's like a ghost bug creature or something. I don't even know how it's supposed to work. And then the stone goes off the side of the building and the bug thing leaps off the building after it. And that's how you get past that. But I was sure that while that worked, it wasn't the proper solution because you lose the stone. Or at least I thought, like, I've lost the stone. So if I throw it, well, I can get past this area. I now don't have my stone, which was, I think, something I really need because I got it before and it's scaring the monsters. And there's no way I want to go through the rest of this game without the stone because it's relatively early in the game this is happening. So what happened was I finally just gave up. Like, I thought, okay, you know what? I don't know what the answer is. I'm just going to chuck the stone over the side. It lets me keep playing. This is the one where I say, okay, save slot number three will be, I'm going to have to come back here. And I thought I'll just go play more of the game and maybe I'll find another way to get another stone or a different idea will come up. And eventually I'll just restore game three or save slot three to go back to here and get past the monster in a different way. But then by exploring all over, you find like you can just go outside below that and on the ground, you find the stone. I'm like, oh, it was that much less complicated than I thought it was going to be. Yeah.
Turns out if you throw the stone off the roof, it just lands outside.
It lands on the ground. For some reason, I thought, well, no, it's going to be gone forever or whatever. Right. Or the monster took it or something. But yeah, that one was tough.
No, I just threw the stone and lucked upon it later. Frankly, yeah. Okay,
well, me too. But I, after ages, just thinking there must be another solution. This can't be right. The only thing that was trouble there is you can't let that thing come all the way up. You got to like go back down and meet it near the edge, or you got to throw the stone at it to kind of scare it back down there, but get it to the edge of the wall. But I liked it. Like, again, I think every puzzle in this game was actually fair. Like I died a bunch of times. Some of the puzzles were difficult, but they were able, I mean, both of us solved it without cheating. So I do think everything was fair and everything was like thematically appropriate. So they were also good puzzles for the theme. Like burning rats is a good theme puzzle for this game.
Absolutely. And yeah. And I don't mind a hard puzzle, but I do mind an unfair puzzle, and I never felt. Yeah, I agree. I agree that these were fair. There was one room outside that once you went out there, you could not get back in to the building. But it turns out there's no reason to go out there at all. So
you're dying in the blizzard.
Yeah, dying in the blizzard.
And again, that's a good setting thing. Like this, like the horror going on outside, but like inside, but the outside is this blizzard that'll basically kill you, which is the weather should be in this kind of game.
Sure, and I loved the use of the blizzard to keep the player from just like randomly exploring all of MIT.
Yeah, because it gives you, and also the fact that you can't just say, I'm going to give up and just go to a movie or something like that. It's like, no, you're trapped in this setting by the weather, which is almost itself a something that's been summoned. It's so bad. As a Canadian, I can appreciate like a horrible snowstorm that makes you want to die.
Yeah.
I dig it. I thought the maintenance band and the wax puzzle was totally fair. The thief urchin thing, like, so I thought that was fair too, because the urchin would steal my stuff and I got worried about that. But then when you scare him with the hand, which I thought that was a little bit of an unfair puzzle, like I just was trying stuff with the urchin, showed the hand that's been revived, and the urchin freaks out and runs away and drops the bolt cutters. So well, that like seemed reasonable. Somebody would see an undead hand come back to life or whatever, that would freak them out. But I didn't have a hint about that ahead of time. It's just like a thing I was trying at random. But that said, I like this urchin much better than the thief and Zork, because the urchin just steals your stuff, but then you're going to get it all back nice and easily. Whereas the thief and Zork was a pain to deal with. So
yes,
I think it was a big improvement over the type of thief that Infocom used to do.
I'm still mad at the thief and Zork because I didn't get all the maximum points in Zork because of that thief. So because you need him to do a thing.
Holding that grudge from episode one, huh?
Yeah. We need to go back and play Zork.
No, we do not. I mean, maybe eventually, but not for a while. 30 years maybe is a good gap between plays. Got to forget everything.
Yeah. I liked the urchin was cool. I liked the hacker. If you show him that same disembodied living hand, all he says is go Mondo Grosso. And that's unfazed. I feel like the hacker's seen some things.
The hacker is in White House. Hacker's got that key. Hacker must have seen that altar that's way too easy to get to.
Right, right. The hacker's key is one of four bugs that I found.
Come on. It was my last chance to find a bug, I now realize. And I still have, I found maybe plot hole that you've now explained isn't one. Okay, what are the freaking bugs? How are you so good at finding bugs?
So of the four bugs I found, one of them is known and was in the list. The other three, as far as I can tell, have not been documented before. Yeah. So the one regarding the key, which has been documented before, is if you examine the
master key,
and then if you after you do that, you ask Hacker about his key ring again. Mm-hmm. He says, "I've accumulated a few keys over the years. I'm a licensed locksmith, which helps. I can get into any room at Tech." He pulls out the key ring on its chain and shows off a key you hadn't noticed before. "This is the master key," he says. And suddenly, you don't have the key anymore, and he does.
Oh, haha.
So, that's fun.
I'm not surprised I didn't find that, because I'd already asked him about the keys. I already got the keys. I don't think to do it again.
Right, right. And the ones that...
I'm just better.
Let's see. The other three are, number one... In the final room of the game, the inner layer room, there's a box with a cover that you can open. And you can do open cover and or open box any number of times. And each time it says you remove the cover, revealing a plethora of electronic innards. So,
it doesn't keep track of the fact that you've opened it.
Doesn't keep track. However, if you take cover, you can only do that once. So anyway, I'm not sure, it's just, I'm not saying
The fact that you can open it more than once and it seems like a bug. I say that's
right.
A bug.
Number two is doing open cover or open box followed by close box yields. You should take the metal cover out of the metal box first. But
okay, that's weird. What?
Okay. So yeah, if you say open cover or open box and then close box, you get the message. You should take the metal cover out of the metal box first. Which is oddly worded. But doing open cover or open box followed by close cover works properly. And then doing take cover followed by close box works properly.
You say take cover, it should say you hide behind the hacker.
Right.
It's a missed opportunity.
So basically, I found those by, I had finished the game and I was just like, I just like the idea of once you're in that final room, you cannot leave. The door's shut. You can't, So I'm just like, what trouble?
And you've got like eight moves or whatever.
Right. It's like, what trouble can I get into, in these with a limited number of objects? And it turns out I found some trouble, I'm just messing with that box. The other thing is, during all of this game, basically, if you fall asleep at any point, you die. Right,
but that makes sense. Yes.
Yes. However,
because if you don't drink the game, Coke, the branded Coke, then you will die.
Right. Exactly. If you fall asleep or if you type sleep, you die because some creature comes and kills you in your sleep. So we're at the end of the game. There's this one move where you are at 100 out of 100 points. You've defeated the creature. You have won the game, and you are one move away from ending the game. You take the stone, ends the game. So basically, you've defeated the baddies, and there's no reason that sleeping should kill you at this point. But if you type sleep or just wait until you fall asleep, you get the same death if something clawed and fanged eats you in your sleep. So
I don't think that's a bug. I think still you've killed the big bad, so the world should be safe, but you fall asleep and it comes back. That seems horror trope enough that it might not be intentional, but it seems to fit the genre.
Okay. All right. I feel like you've killed the big bad and the guy deserves a nap at this point.
But imagine if this is a movie, it killed the big bad and grab the stone. I'd rather take a 15-minute nap here in the water. You should just drown.
Right.
You're in a room full of electrified water. Where are you napping?
Right. Yeah, you're
nap on monster. You get up on the big squidgy monster, wrap yourself in a tentacle and go to sleep.
Aww. Yeah, the ending that once you take the stone and then a little tiny monster, stone cracks open and a little tiny monster cracks out of it and and flies off, which is
supposed to be like the going to be the sequel. Like it's a cold alien universe and there's always another
thing. It's the horror movie gotcha. You know,
yeah,
you
because
think you're
the,
out of
the stone
it.
Is actually an egg. Yeah.
Right. Stone is actually an egg. Anyway, so, but yeah, it reminded me of Trinity, just like, oh, you defeated the thing, but then like, oh, it's all going to happen again. We're going to repeat some, you know, that kind of that repeat ending of, mm-hmm. I probably shouldn't have said that because I just spoiled the end of Trinity. But it reminded me of that kind of that looping thing, you know, that happens in Trinity. If you want to edit that out, you can, but
nope, I'm going to make it our, the thing we say before the opening credits to make sure everyone gets it.
Okay.
It might be the only part I leave in. It should be that. Cool. And then like, you've listened. That's it. That's the whole.
Thanks to MC for the one.
I like it.
Me too.
Yeah. I don't think I have anything else.
No, that's all
I'm
my
really,
notes.
Like, yeah. I am so thankful and so happy and filled with such a sense of accomplishment for this podcast and for playing all these games. Like, this has been super fun, dude. Like 3.5 years. It's a long time.
Yeah.
For us to get through these things.
I really honestly couldn't. I've had so much fun doing this, and I couldn't think of a better podcast buddy to play these games with me.
Thanks,
and you really seem to, you know, appreciate the games, and I love talking to you. And
yeah, it's been also you're right. It's, I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, this has been a fun reason to talk with my pal. Like, so we just happen to talk about this. It just gives an excuse to essentially have a phone call with microphones. But still, like, I never would have played these games otherwise. So I hopefully our listeners have enjoyed being on the journey with us. But honestly, regardless, it's just been super fun to play these games and to finally have them done. I'm now like, I'm a guy who's played all these games. Like, that's, you know, gotta have some sort of accomplishment in my life, and this can be it.
Absolutely. And we did it.
Finally,
man.
Did something with my life.
Yikes. All right. So we're going to do four more, though. We'll do the graphical ones.
Should we do a wrap up about these or wrap up at the end with the graphical ones?
That's what I was asking you. I mean, yes, I definitely want to do a wrap up one. And does it make more sense to do it now where it's just the text ones? Or should we wait a little longer and include the graphical ones?
Having not played the graphical ones, I don't know. Like, in my mind, they're going to be a very different thing. But maybe they're not.
Right. Maybe not. I don't know.
I don't know either. If I played them, I would have a better opinion. But I've played none of these graphical ones at all. I know nothing about them.
Are the graphical ones part of the zeitgeist?
Apparently, zeitgeist is now part of the zeitgeist. It's cool. Amazing how that happens. Remember zeitgeist at the end of Trinity? That's the word you have to type to win the game?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I don't know. What do you think?
I think we should do it now.
Okay.
We can amend it later.
I like it too. Yeah. I think we should reach out to listeners. If you're listening to this, we'll reach out to you now and I'll put some stuff on Twitter or whatever to give us ideas of the sorts of things we should cover. Like, clearly, I think we should talk about like favorite games, least favorite games, favorite puzzles, favorite stuff, rankings, kind of thing.
Favorite box art, favorite NPC.
Favorite NPC, definitely, because there's a couple, definitely.
Yeah.
Favorite mystery. Favorite Sherlock Holmes. Never gets old.
Subscribe.
I dig it. Yes, I think, okay, so we'll, for people who didn't listen past the spoiler fence, it'll be a surprise little boom, wrap up. And then we go on to whatever the heck we had said we were going to play. I've already forgotten.
Yeah. Yeah, let's take a couple days and try to get our questions that we can put into the doc, and so we can both look at them and think about them for a while.
I like it.
And then in a few days we'll record a wrap up and best of summary something.
I dig it.
Cool. All right.
I guess that's it for this one. End of an era, baby.
End of an era. We did it, man. And this oh man, I'm so glad we did this, and it kept my mind off of.
Thank you for giving me to do this during both awful politics and then 2020 and pandemic. And thank goodness for this distraction is what I'm saying. This has kept me sane for the last 3.5 years. So hooray for that.
Hooray for that.
And that brings us to the end of this show. So this has been Eaten by a Grue, the Infocom podcast. If you want, you can send us email, Grue, G-R-U-E, at monsterfeet.com. Give us some ideas for the wrap-up thing and ways to rank things or whatever. Or tell us your favorite episodes. Tell us your favorite episode, but tell us your favorite puzzles or games or whatever.
Wrap-up. I told you that before.
Oh, that's true. Right. Yes, he does have the wrap-up. Oh, nicely done. But we're not there yet. First, you can hit us up on Twitter. He is at KSavitz. I am at Carrington. If you want to help people find the podcast, we'd appreciate it if you give us a nice review on iTunes. Tell them there's a big back catalog for people to listen to. The show notes and such can be found at monsterfeet.com. And thanks to MC Frontalot. Now I got to beat your rap thing for letting us use his song as our theme tune. And thus teaching us that in a cold alien universe, the only emotion stronger than feeling fear is feeling funky. See, I can do it too. Next up, we will have a wrap-up show, and then we will finally get around to Shogun and the weird graphical Infocom games. But in the meantime, thank you for podcasting with me, Kay, and thank you for 3.5 amazing years so far.
Thank you for podcasting with me, Carrington.
That came out of nowhere. That actually came out. I was like, whoa, what the heck is that? Nice, nice.
Walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Grue.
There's your jump scare.
There's my jump scare. I dig it. I dig it. That was a good one. I'm glad. Oh my gosh, I'm so glad the game was actually good. I've been building up. I thought, what if this is just a stinker? And it's like our last episode of this, and the game sucks.
Yeah. No.
Nope. But it was good. Hooray that it was good.
Indeed.
I'm glad you liked it too. I was worried that this was going to be another one of those mystery ones where it's like,
I was worried this is going to be Sherlock 2.0 or something. But
I wish.